So today we will hear the third of these three very, very, very important classes in this chapter, Narada's instructions on the Srimad Bhagavatam.
Evam Ninam Kriya Yoga.
Evam Ninam Kriya Yoga.
Sarvasam Smriti Hetava.
Sarvasam Smriti Hetava.
Tadeva Mam Vinasaya.
Tadeva Mam Vinasaya.
Kalpante Kalpita Pare.
Kalpante Kalpita Pare.
Evam Rinam Kriya Yoga.
Evam Rinam Kriya Yoga.
Sarve Samsmriti Hetava.
Sarve Samsmriti Hetava.
Ta Evatma Vinasaya.
Ta Evatma Vinasaya.
Kalpante Kalpita Pare.
Kalpante Kalpita Pare.
Evam Rinam Kriya Yoga.
Evam Rinam Kriya Yoga.
Sarve Samsmriti Hetava.
Sarve Samsmriti Hetava.
Ta Evatma Vinasaya.
Ta Evatma Vinasaya.
Kalpante Kalpita Pare.
Kalpante Kalpita Pare.
Evam.
Evam.
Thus.
Thus.
Nirnam.
Nirnam.
Of the human being.
Of human being.
Kriya Yoga.
Kriya Yoga.
All activities.
All activities.
Sarve.
Sarve.
Everything.
Everything.
Samsmriti.
Samsmriti.
Material existence.
Material existence.
Hetava.
Hetava.
Causes.
Causes.
Te.
Te.
That.
That.
Eva.
Eva.
Certainly.
Certainly.
Atma.
Atma.
The tree of work.
The tree of work.
Vinasaya.
Vinasaya.
Killing.
Killing.
Kalpante.
Kalpante.
Become competent.
Become competent.
Kalpita.
Kalpita.
Dedicated.
Dedicated.
Pare.
Pare.
Unto the transcendence.
Unto the transcendence.
Translation. Thus, when all a man's activities, are dedicated to the service of the Lord,
those very activities
which caused his perpetual bondage, become the destroyer. Of the tree of work.
Of the tree of work.
Now this is a really powerful verse actually. It has so much significant meaning within it. So let's go on to the purport and then we'll come back. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada, he first tells us about the tree. It's a different tree. He's already called this the tree of work. We can kill the tree of work. So this is a different analogy of a tree that he gives now. Fruitive work. So fruitive work, we understand that I work very hard, I plant this tree, and as it grows up, it gives me some wonderful fruit. And my intention in planting it was obvious. Obviously, I planted it because I wanted the fruit. Why else would I plant a tree? So this is called fruitive work. And this becomes like chains. I plant the tree. Then I need water. So maybe I am a very poor person. I need to find a well. Maybe I even need to dig a well because this is going to be a huge tree. So I get my well going. And then I'm watering the tree and watering the tree. And while I'm waiting for the tree, I'm protecting the tree, so much activity is going on, and sometimes animals are coming and eating my tree, and then I have to work out how to get rid of the animals and make greater protection for my tree. And then my tree is growing, but some of the fruit don't look very healthy and nice. So then I have to go to Bunnings and look at all the repellents and the insect sprays and so on and so forth, and find the best one and come back and spray my tree with this. And this, of course, kills all the insects that are disturbing the growth and fruit of my tree. However, there's some reaction for that, because I killed all of those insects because I wanted my tree to grow so I could get the fruit. So there is some reaction there that's going to have to be shared by me later. Never mind. On we go. So we put in the fertilizer and the tree's growing, and it's not growing fast enough. So then we think, maybe I should have two trees, because this tree is actually, I find out now, it's a slow grower, and there's a new breed out in Bunnings that will tell you this tree grows apples in 5 years, so I might as well plant another one just in case. I plant another one, so I've got two trees now. I feel really safe, because if one, then you know, they talk about diversifying your assets, so I've got two. And then this one is very unhealthy, it's not growing so well. I go back and complain, because you know, it said on the label that it would grow healthy. So they tell me, no, you fix the soil. So now I'm digging the soil, my tree is growing, the other tree is growing, and this is how life is. And then I think to myself, well, this tree is growing so well, and you know, I'm putting so much time in. This is all intelligent, especially merchant class people who do fruitive work, start thinking, I could get 30 trees. Grow them all. I've got an extra plot of land over here. I could put 30 in, and then they're just behind this one in growth, and then they're going to come up, then this one will come up. And in this way, from this one original intention, comes thousands of intentions, one after the other, after the other, all logical. They're not stupid things. I'm not wasting my time. I am a very intelligent, responsible, serious, careful person who's making decisions all based on the fruit. If all of those trees died, I would feel very, very unhappy, because so much wasting of time, because there was no fruit. So fruitive work, which has perpetually, that means like forever and ever and ever, engage the living being, is compared in the Bhagavad Gita, is compared to the banyan tree in the Bhagavad Gita. So for those who have not seen it, which includes myself, I have read about, because I like trees, so since you put the word tree in there, I'm like, oh, okay, this is interesting. So there's a tree in Calcutta that is a banyan tree, and some people say, Srila Prabhupada says it is over 500 years old, and other people say it's 250 years old, and it has grown and grown and grown, and it has around about, I think if I'm not incorrect, over 1,000 trunks, and it covers many, many acres. And so this tree is sometimes advertised as the tree that moves, because it's here, then it's there, then it's there, then it's there. And the tree is so intelligent, it goes in the direction of sunlight and not in the direction of industry and other difficulties that it would face if it went in an opposite way. So this is what a banyan tree is like, an amazing banyan tree. I think it has the most trunks in the whole world. So you feel when you walk through that banyan tree as if you're walking through a forest. And you would never think, if you were not educated, that this is one tree. So this is also how our existence is. In this one life, so many trunks have come down, and they've rooted into the ground, and they've created another, until they create this mass. And so when you meet a person, even if the person is myself, if you meet somebody who has not been raised and educated on a spiritual path, and you tell them about Krishna consciousness, you're asking them to hear you through a forest of fruitive desires and so on and so forth surrounding them. So when somebody does hear your call and starts to listen a little bit, you should celebrate that, because you should understand the magnitude of what is fruitive work. And the large, vast majority of people in this world are wholeheartedly engaged like that, for perpetually, forever and ever and ever. So you can ask very seriously, as Srila Prabhupada did, how can they be helped? How can they get out? Some pious souls are on the higher branches of the tree. They're doing more sattvic good things. They're doing things that are aligned with spiritual growth and development. But the vast majority of people of this world are rooted in some kind of mix of piety and a lot of impiety, and they ignorantly or innocently don't even know it. So Bhagavad Gita tells us about this tree, the tree that has a tree growing up and a tree growing down. Even the banyan tree in Calcutta, it grows down and up, but it doesn't replicate itself. But the tree in Bhagavad Gita does. It grows up that way and down that way in a symmetrical fashion, identical. Top and bottom are identical. And this image is given to help us to understand how life in this world is a reflection of reality, and how reality has all the characteristics of life in this world, except it's devoid of some of the most unpleasant and painful things. Just like if there was a tiger and he was chasing you, and there was a pool of water and a tree, and the tiger is running behind you very quickly, and you know that if I climb the tree, I'll be safe. What will happen if you climb the illusory tree? Maybe he can swim, but maybe he cannot catch you if you catch hold of the branches of the real tree. So we're asked as Vaishnavas, as followers of spiritual path, seriously, to catch hold of the real tree and to use the illusory tree in the service of reality. And this is what is being spoken of here. The perpetual bondage, the same ingredients that cause the perpetual bondage can turn the other way and release us. And once we experience this, Srila Prabhupada's deepest desire was that we share this experience with other people so that they too have an opportunity to look at things a little bit differently. So this fruitive work tree is certainly very deeply rooted. As long as the desire for enjoying the fruit of work is there, my apples off my apple tree, one has to continue the transmigration of the soul from one body or one place to another according to one's nature of work. Now this too is so simple. It's such an amazingly simple understanding. And so once you get a simple idea, it's very easy to remember it. If it's very complicated, you might forget. But this is like this. I've planted my one tree, and I've planted my now 10 or 20 trees, and I inherited some land from my great-grandmother, and so now I've decided that I'll also not only plant apple trees, I'll plant orange trees. and I've planted the orange trees. And not only have I planted now apple and orange trees, I discovered that you could take the avocado pit and you could put two little sticks into it, little toothpicks, put it in water, and it would grow. Now, without having to go and buy a tree, I've found a way that I can now make another tree. But avocado trees take 15 years before you get an avocado. So now my plan for my apple trees, my orange trees, and my avocado trees, it's at least going to be 15 years that I'm going to be doing this. And so while I'm waiting, I should do a few more things. So I set a few more things in action. But because the mind has greater flexibility than the body or time, my mind is racing on all the other things I could do in my beautiful garden, but the time span of my body is not going to last as long as my expectations. And so mercifully, what Krishna arranges is extra time, so I can get the fruit of my apples and my oranges and so forth. I may be born in the same field, I may become the son of an agriculturalist, and I walk by that field and I think, wow, I like a field like that, why don't I buy it? And I buy it, and then I start again. And I say, I don't know what it is about this place, it's so, gives me so much energy, you know, I feel so good here. So let me, and so I go on. And that's another life. And then another life. Because my plans exceed the amount of time that I have. So what most people are doing, Hare Krishna Mataji. Hare Krishna, welcome. So what most people are doing, from the time they wake up in the morning, and possibly even when they're asleep, is they're making plans in relationship to what they see, in relationship to what they hear, in relationship to what they touch. They're making plans. Don't you notice it yourself? Yeah? As soon as you get up, you're making plans. And for a devotee, they're thinking, oh, it'd be really nice to go to India this year. It would be really nice if I could do this and that. And I need to learn Sanskrit. I don't know how to learn Sanskrit. It would be so good if I could, you know, learn how to be a pujari and do that as well, and so many things. It's the nature of nature, or the nature of the mind, to completely all the time be making plans. And so we're clocking on more time to our desires. And sometimes they go up and down, they go to other planets. Like, I would love to see heaven. I've heard about Swarga or heaven. There people enjoy in incredible ways. I've read about it. And I've also seen a YouTube video on this. And I've also been reading in the news that some people are going to go to Mars. So I would like to. And then you're starting to go extra celestial, so you're going out into the space, and these things are going to take you like mountainous ages to accomplish, if at all. And this is what people are doing with the time of their lives. They're making plans. So we're doing it, they're doing it. We're making plans, they're making plans. We're making plans because we have the same faculties that they do. They have a mind, a brain, and so on and so forth. We do also. But there's a difference between our plans and their plans. And it may be just a small difference, because we may still be quite materially engrossed. But gradually, the difference between their plans and our plans becomes noticeable. Because our plans include the idea, I would like to offer some service to the deities. I would like to understand them more. I would like to experience them as they are. Wow, now that's a very difficult thing to achieve. And practically, the deities are watching us constantly. I don't know how many people have had this, but somebody told me recently
that while he was in Vrindavan, he was chanting, he had a dream, and he was walking up and down in the temple room chanting. And then he noticed, he turned around and he saw that Srila Prabhupada was moving his counterbeats in his dream. And so when he woke up, he suddenly realized that somehow or other that Srila Prabhupada sitting there, not in a kind of a way that we can exactly understand, but if our consciousness becomes more and ultra, ultra, ultra purified, we would be able to see that here is Gaunatai, here is Radha Balava, here is Jagannath, Subhadra and Baladeva, and they're physically present. They're vibrantly present. They're not statues, they're not deities, they're not static, they're ecstatic. And we ourselves would become ecstatic. So this tree of fruit, this fruited tree, is very deeply rooted. And as I said, we and they have the same faculties. So we and they meaning everyone else, we all have the same predicament, that the mind is racing and creating so many dreams. As long as the tendency, the propensity for enjoying the fruit of work is there, one has to continue the transmigration of the soul from one body or place to another, according to one's nature of work. So this is called the tree of work. The propensity for enjoyment, now how do you transform it? The propensity for enjoyment may be turned into the desire for serving the mission of the Lord. This is very important. The propensity for enjoyment may be turned into the desire for serving the mission of the Lord. And generally speaking, when we're very, very newcomers, as we were once, we would be asked to do whatever service was necessary. You must do this, it's needed in the temple, you must do that, you must do this. And we would think, I don't like doing this. You have to sweep the floor, I don't like sweeping the floor. You have to cook in the kitchen, oh, that's so boring. On and on and on, and you have to go against your desire in so many ways. Just like these boys, I think they like taking notes, but it's not always fun to have to come, sit, and write, and so forth. So that they have to do it because their parents are wise and they say, you have to come. And so even when they say, I'm sleepy and tired, their parents say, let's come to the temple. Yes? Yeah? Yes. So we're like that also, that Krishna says, you have to do it, you have to do it. So the beginning oftentimes is you have to do it. Very much discipline is required to even just keep going. But then, once you get the hang of it, like these boys, they can come to the temple by themselves. They don't need their parents dragging them along or else they won't go. And they don't stay sleeping in bed because their habit now and their taste now has changed. And they're doing the same thing, getting up in the morning, getting out their books, taking their pencil, taking notes. But look what they're taking notes on. So this is how this propensity for enjoyment is transformed slowly, 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 slowly to something that serves the mission of the Lord. And that propensity of enjoyment, it's not stamped out like, you can't have that. That's not the way that Krishna consciousness evolves. What is meant to happen is that we gradually understand our relationship with the deities. And we get great pleasure in offering whatever we have to them. And then our Krishna consciousness is starting to grow. Sometimes stamping is required if we have something that's particularly serious. But it's not the process, it's the pre-process. The process of Krishna consciousness is to develop delight in seeing and serving the deities. The conclusion is that when the result of all fruitive and other work
is dovetailed. Dovetailed, we mean this is a carpenter's term, actually. And I'm not sure what the original, what Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used for this term. But if you notice, dovetailing is when you have one like this and one like this, and you put them like this, and they become very strong. You put the two pieces together by a system that has interlaced them, and it's used in chairs and tables and so forth. So this dovetailing our desire with the service of the Lord will cease to generate further karma. So karma here means that it is my desire, my fruitive desire. Oh, I want a whole bunch of pear trees now, and some passion fruit. But now I will be saying, it would be so nice to have pears that I could offer to Ratbalava. And some passion fruit, they're so tasty, and I could take those every day, I could cut them in half, I could offer them to Krishna. He would like them so much, they're so nice. I like them, he would like them. So this is slowly, slowly, slowly erasing the tendency to fruitive work. Fruit is coming, but it isn't my priority to enjoy the fruit. This is the distinction. Fruit should be coming. Perhaps in the beginning, some people, they feel like, oh, I'm such a fruitive worker, I should give everything up. I don't want any more apple trees, no more trees. Trees are my passion, so I should ignore trees from now on. That may happen for some time. But Krishna says, but I like trees, I like fruit. So then you go back and you start doing these things and offering something wonderful. This will gradually develop into transcendental devotional service, which will not only cut off completely, cut off the roots. If you cut off the roots of a tree, it's not going to survive. It will cut off completely the roots of the banyan tree of work, but it will also carry the performer to the lotus feet of the Lord. So now Prabhupada speaks about find devotees. The summary is that one has to first of all seek the association of pure devotees, but who are not only learned in the Vedanta, but who are also self-realized souls and unalloyed devotees of Lord Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead. So sometimes Srila Prabhupada would say, all my devotees are pure devotees. And sometimes he would use the term to signify somebody very advanced on the path of pure devotional service. So the first thing is we should understand the distinction between pure devotee and not pure devotee. Because there are many, many levels of devotional people in the world. We can't cross them all off as having nothing, and we, as an immature bhakta, have everything. No, they also have devotion. But as their concepts are purified, their devotion is purified. So oftentimes, very faithful, religious, pious, moral people, their understanding is not the same as ours. It's not that we should cut off the fruitiveness. They still want the fruit themselves because they feel like God has given me this, I should enjoy this. And they thank God, thank you so much for giving me these fruits and I will enjoy them. And this is also not improper, but they don't necessarily have, or they may have beginning to develop the idea that this belongs to you. And in one sense, you can find people who are highly involved in devotion who have not even touched the Krishna consciousness movement. Why is that? How could that be? Well, it's simple, because Krishna says, I'm seated in everyone's heart. So he's the guiding force. So if someone is looking for him, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur tells us, he will never fail to reciprocate with that person. And eventually, perhaps, he will bring them to the path of pure devotional service, which the implication is the purity is in the concept of offering things primarily for the pleasure of the deities and secondarily for my pleasure. Primary, secondary. That's the distinction for a pure devotee. And then when you get to the level of Srila Prabhupada, he is 100% primary and secondary. He takes whatever Krishna gives in exchange without any fear, without any worry, with full confidence in what he's doing. So when you meet someone like that, only from them can you get this change of concept. Put this primary, put that secondary. Because everyone else is putting primary me and secondarily my religious faith. It's the tendency. You cannot say that everyone is doing it, but it's the tendency. Even it's our tendency if we look very closely in our hearts. So how do we become more pure, pure devotees? By putting Krishna primarily and our desires secondarily. And so people who are adept at this, oftentimes you say to them, I will see you next week, and they say, Krishna willing. Krishna willing. If Krishna desires, then. So we need to seek this kind of association, and the Bhagavatam, of course, is the source of the greatest amount of this association from Srila Prabhupada's own consciousness, transferring for the modern age. And we see it's very hard for modern people to accept it, but were you to give them the Vedas, they would find that impossible even to understand. In that association, as Srila Prabhupada here with us, the neophyte and beginning devotees must render service, loving service, physically and mentally without reservation. So there we can see, we can judge ourselves by that. Do we have reservations? I think if we're honest, most of us would have to say, yeah, I have a few reservations. If I was asked to do this, I don't know if I could do it. What if this happened? I don't know what I would do. So then we can judge our eligibility or our progress by how many reservations we have. And we can advance from there. That is the wonderful part. This service attitude will induce the great souls to be more favorable in bestowing their mercy. This mood, I want to improve, which infuses the neophyte with all the transcendental qualities of the pure devotees. Now this is wonderful, because I think, like myself, most of us could say, we're neophytes. We're just beginners on this amazing path of Krishna consciousness. And so, if I can improve my mood of service according to my nature, according to what I like to offer to Krishna, but gradually putting Krishna subtly and more in the foreground, then the qualities, the transcendental qualities, they come into us. And we even find ourselves able to speak in ways that we ourselves never thought. Because these qualities are coming to us. We're asked to do the service and the qualities follow. If we take the attempt, yes, I'm doing the service, the qualities follow. Gradually one develops into a strong attachment to hearing the transcendental pastimes of the Lord, which makes him able to catch up the constitutional position of the gross and subtle bodies. So that means that the strong attachment now is to hearing about Krishna as a person. He's a person. He's a person. This is a supreme person. What is that like? What would a supreme person do? What would be his qualities? What would he be like? This starts to become interesting and relevant. I need this information. And then he starts to step beyond the characteristics of his mind and his body. He starts to be interested in the soul-to-soul relationship. He starts to be interested in the real tree, not the reflected tree, the image of the tree. And he catches up his nature beyond the body and the mind, and beyond them to the knowledge of the pure soul and his eternal relationship with the Supreme Soul, the Personality of Godhead. You come to a point where you, I want that. That's mine. It's not like I want that, that would be amazing. It's I want that, that's mine, and that's me. And then you know that the fire is starting to burn more brightly. So then Srila Prabhupada and all of our acharyas, they always bring us gently, gently, gently through our journey of life to the real penultimate place. After the relation is ascertained by establishment of the eternal relationship, after we've established I have an eternal relationship, pure devotional service to the Lord begins gradually developing like a rose opening a few leaves, a few petals. Each day you open a little bit each day until the rose is at its most beautiful point, and you can look inside and see all the petals in circles around each other, and the fragrance of the rose is now so strong that you feel the joy that that flower was meant to offer. So it gradually develops into perfect knowledge of the Personality of Godhead beyond the purview of impersonal Brahman and localized Paramatma. That means that first I understood that everything was spiritual, and that was a big step forward. I saw that everything is spiritual, actually. I don't understand it very well, but they're spiritual, you're spiritual, everybody is spirit. And then I'm told that actually even the things that we see like this can become spiritualized. So I'm seeing that things can become spiritualized of this world. The material things can become spiritual. That's my first step. My second step is that I see not only that everything outside is spiritual, but I have my own direct inner guide. That doesn't mean that now I don't need any other guidance, but it means that in any situation, I can seek guidance and will receive guidance from within. This is the localized Paramatma aspect that Krishna says, I'm seated in everyone's heart. I'm giving them knowledge, giving them forgetfulness, giving them direction. So now I perceive it, that I'm getting direction. I feel very safe because I'm giving guidance, and I respect others because I see that they're also receiving guidance. They may listen, they may not listen, but they're receiving guidance. But now I've gone a step above, and this only in Krishna consciousness, actually. This is the part that is only there in Krishna consciousness. And we don't say that in a fanatical sense, we say that in a very real sense. And that is information about transcendence. And you can't get there by your own means, because you can read, you can study, you can look all over the world, and you'll find that the best spiritual thinkers, they go to these two levels. And none of them, if they're not in Krishna consciousness, none of them will tell you that God is blue. They don't know that. And of course, we also sometimes think, God is blue? Have to think about that. But this is the truth. This highest level is only there in Krishna consciousness. So we develop from perfect knowledge of the Personality of Godhead beyond the impersonal, beyond the Paramatma in the heart, By this Purushottam Yoga, as it is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, one is made perfect even during the present corporeal existence, even during this life. And one exhibits all the good qualities of the Lord, not all the good qualities of a human being, but exhibits all the good qualities of the Lord to the highest percentage. So this is extremely valuable, important information for us. Such, Srila Prabhupada finishes by saying, is the gradual development by association of pure devotees. So we remember here that Narada has met Vyasadeva at a crisis point where he's done all that he could, all the best work he could, and he feels incomplete. And Narada has come just as he was thinking, perhaps the reason I feel so much loneliness, emptiness, barrenness in my heart is because I haven't really gone deeply enough into the full spiritual essence. That's us. But he says, perhaps it's because I have not described Krishna sufficiently. I've described the other two levels of God realization, but I haven't actually focused firmly enough on this absolute transcendence or the real tree. And so Narada confirms it, as does the pure devotee. They confirm, yes, you're correct. You must concentrate on this highest level if you want that full satisfaction. And how do we do it? Gradually. We do it gradually. But we make the definition very clear. We make the definition of the goal very clear, and then we try our best to move forward from whoever we are, wherever we are. What are our ups and downs? What are our strengths and weaknesses? What are our attachments? What are our virtues? We try to move in that direction. And if it should take one life, two lives, three lives, it's almost irrelevant. It doesn't really matter. The only thing that matters is that we get there. Just as, of course, we see in the university that you have 1 year to get to this point, 1 year to get there. But someone may fail, and then they may have to repeat the year. And so if they get there in 2 years, they still get all the celebration of their achievement, even if it takes a little longer. So we should be very encouraged and encouraging of those who have taken up this path. And we should also be very compassionate and kind, according to our capacity, to those who have not yet found this way. So I'll stop here. If anyone has any questions, please, I'll be happy to hear them. Yes, Krishna.
Mentioning about the banning tree in Bhagavad Gita, which goes up and down at the same time, which were identical.
Yes.
So is that in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita?
Yes, it's in the 15th chapter. It's called Purushottam Yoga, or the Yoga of the Supreme Person. Yes, it grows up this way, and of course, if you never see a tree in this world, it's growing up and down. So as you're thinking about a tree that grows up and down, then you realize that it's a reflected tree. There's a reflection of the tree. This is the material world. Yes. And when it's a very stormy day, very, very stormy, you can't see this tree at all because the wind, the water is all turbulent. You can't even see it. You can't see this one and you can't see that one. But when the water becomes calm, things are more peaceful, then sometimes they look the same. Good question. Any other questions?
Mother, you have one question.
Yes.
In the Papa, you said that the devotees who let me analyze the passion fruits, then I should offer it to Yoda, even in life too. No?
Sorry,
I didn't hear. Can you speak it again? Your husband should speak it.
Passion fruit. She's talking about passion fruit. You're talking about
passion fruit, yes.
Because if somebody thought that I like passion fruit,
yes.
So I will offer to the Lord and he will like it too.
Yes.
So I was talking to one devotee once that
yes.
I cook the food which I like and I thought that the Lord will like it too. But then he told me that because you are thinking about your choice.
Yes.
So that's sense gratification.
Well, you see, we have to start from somewhere. You have to start from somewhere. So that you started, perhaps, and I won't talk about yourself, but say I started cooking non-veg. I was cooking non-veg for my family and I was happy doing that. And somebody comes along and tells me that, you know, you shouldn't be eating these things. There is karma involved. This is not good. And so I thought, okay, so I become a vegan. Now I'm a vegan and I don't drink milk, I don't believe in any of these things because there's a good reason and so on. So I'm now offering things according to my taste, right? But it's a step forward, it's a big step forward. So then the next step forward, maybe then I decide that actually, you know, God must like what I like, as you say, that's a certain point in my evolution. But then we go a step further forward and we start, you know, and it's an evolution. We start thinking, I wonder what he likes. And then when we start thinking, I wonder what he likes, then we may change, we may cook specially for him, and we may offer, as we do in the temple, we offer something specially on the altar and then something for everyone else to cook. But we're moving in the concept, towards the concept, I do what he likes. And it may be that he likes what I like. Or it may not be. So we see as we go further on in our journey. But yes, I think for a very long time, we largely perform our activities a little on the threshold of bhakti and largely in the mood of sense gratification. It takes a long time before there's no sense gratification involved. So we're coming up. So steps are there for somebody who's coming up.
It's a bit hard to know what he likes.
What's that?
It's a bit hard
to know what he likes. Well, then you make some inquiry, right? You find somebody and you look around and you ask and you find out from somewhere, because now, you know what it is? It's like, say we say, he's here, he's within me. And I'm going along doing everything, and I'm not thinking of him, I'm thinking of me. And then if I stop, and I start thinking, I wish I could think about you, I wish I could find out what you like, he may just pop me in connection with somebody who says, oh, and they tell me something that's a clue on my journey towards understanding what he likes. And we think, or we usually say, that was really lucky. I was really lucky today. I was thinking such and such, and then such and such happened. And we call it luck, or we call it like, just amazing that that happened. Or, as we evolve further, we may feel this connection there, and we may start, first we may start misusing that connection and saying, please give me a new bicycle. Please give me some days off from school. Please give me this, give me this. He's there with me and I see it coming. And so I think this is a very good relationship. But then as we grow more mature, we realize that, well, I should give something. And then when we're very mature, then we think, I should give everything. And we have to find out about who is this personality. Is he a frog? Is he a frog? What can he do? Who is he? And then, see, knowledge is increasing, and with the increase in knowledge, in pure knowledge, comes pure devotion. Because you understand your conclusions are going higher and higher.
And the second thing I wanted to know is, you know how you were saying that you have a desire like I want to read the Sanskrit.
Yes.
But there are so many good songs in Bengali, and I thought it's
why don't you insert the two words Krishna willing? You might be born in some remote Bengali village and you sing like a lark, but you're thinking all the time, I wonder what the Western world is like. So if you're thinking, yes, it would be so nice to sing Bengali songs, we have nice desires. I remember somebody telling me in my next life I wanted to speak Bengali. And then I was thinking to myself, yeah, but clarify it a little more. Because anything could happen. Speaking Bengali, we were in Bangladesh for some time and the rickshaw wallah spoke Bengali. So add a little more, a few more filters should come in. Otherwise, you'll be surprised what you might get. If you would like to do it for your own pleasure, then it's not mature yet. It still carries with it some degree of self-enjoyment, self-centeredness. If you would think that it would be so nice to do it for others, that's more evolved, more advanced. And if you would come to the point that you were to think, it would be so nice to sing bhajans for the pleasure of the Lord, I wish I had a beautiful voice to sing bhajans for the pleasure of the Lord. Now you're starting to get a few filters in there that you're going to have to be born as a devotee. Because otherwise how can you sing them for the pleasure of the Lord? So as we look around, we can create desires. It's not the ideal thing, but you can create desires based on Krishna consciousness and think it would be so nice to serve in the temple, the TOVP. It would be so nice to be a pujari there. Let me think about that. That would be so wonderful. It would be so nice to be able to travel all around the world and wake people up. You know, just watch people becoming spiritualized right before me. It would be so nice. And then you go and you offer that. You offer that desire. Because it won't be a perfect concept, because we're tiny. So our little concept may not be as satisfying as it seems right now from where we are right now. And then more advanced than that, you feel like saying, you work it out. You know me, you know all my characteristics and my nature, you know my strengths and weaknesses, you know my level of advancement, you know everything. Please place me in a position that's going to enhance my service to you, to devotees, and to people in general. Because these are the three categories that Krishna benedicts us with. Yeah, it's pacifying. Yes, Prabhupada.
I've heard Krishna, if you want to learn prayers and singing,
yes.
Yes. Why do you reject the spiritual world? Because we are seeing Krishna directly.
Yes, of course. You don't have to come back, but you might want to come back. Or you mightn't have formed an idea of going to the spiritual world yet. You might be thinking of here. So then Krishna's not going to sort of pick you up and disorient you by popping you in the spiritual world when you're thinking of here. So that's why we need to hear, because gradually we shift from, I would like to sing songs here in the temple in Dang Street. And then as we evolve through the process of here, gradually we start thinking, oh Krishna, it would be really amazing if I could sing him a song, right? And then that's our evolution forward. And we think, we have to think, what would that be like? I wonder what it would be like to sing to Krishna. And then as Srila Prabhupada said, then you start becoming interested in the activities of the Lord. Then you start thinking, I'd better read some Krishna book. Because by reading Krishna book, I'll find out what it's like there. And so Prabhupada even used that example himself when he was in New York, in the very, very beginning, and he was traveling from New York over to San Francisco. And the young devotees in New York thought that he would always be with them. Because he was so pleased with them, and they had just emerged out of the darkness of night, and they just thought, he will always be here with us. But he was instantly thinking of where else he could go and help others also. So he uses the example that one man, Harvey Cohen, he has gone to San Francisco and he is writing me, "Swamiji, you should come here, it is like this." So Srila Prabhupada was talking in relationship to the Brahma Samhita, that in the Brahma Samhita it describes something of the spiritual world. So he was saying that if Mr. Cohen, if he keeps writing me, the trees are like this, the weather is like this, the land is like this, the cost of housing is like this, on and on and on, I'll start thinking, yeah, I want to go and see it. Mm-hmm. That's exactly the same law of attraction that works in relationship to our Krishna consciousness. Because that is the law of attraction down here. And we want to take that same principle and use it up here. So the subject changes, but the utilization and the qualifications remain the same. Meaning that now I have a new desire. It's a desire up here instead of a desire down there. So yes, very true. You can elevate in that way. Thank you. If there are no questions, then we can finish here. Thank you.
Hare Krishna.